Meditation.
Depending on the quality of my mind.
You know, there's good days and bad days. And good days as well.
Feel like the waterfall of thoughts. And every now and then, a nice calm.
I can't think of anything.
This is Meditation in the City.
The Shambhala New York Podcast.
And I am Dave, your host. And do you ever have the thought, I can't meditate? So what do? Well, on top of the normal panic and self-denigration and binge-watching a show on Netflix, now there is something else you can do. You can listen to this episode of the podcast. This is a talk by Dr. Shante Smalls from a few weeks ago at our weekly Dharma gathering. The talk is called, I Can't Meditate. How about that? Right on target. Visit our website, ny.shambhala.org, for more information about our classes and weekend retreats. Our introductory meditation course, which is called Meditation in Everyday Life, is beginning June 1st. And the daytime version of the course is beginning June 6th. Check it out. Visit our website for that information or information about other stuff coming up later this summer. Good stuff. Dr. Shante Smalls is a professor, scholar, artist, writer. She's been a student in the Shambhala tradition since 2006. You've heard her on the podcast before. Here is Dr. Shante Smalls.
Last week, I think it was, I was coming here. So I was coming to do an all-day practice with some other practitioners. So I'm, you know, up early. Took the dogs out, had my chai and my, you know, to-go mug. You know this story is going, right? So I go to the train. And there's a power outage. And there are no trains. So it's not only not my train line, there are no trains on that line. Okay, things happen. I'm feeling serene, you know what I mean? Open, it's a beautiful day. I go out. Okay, Lyft, come pick me up, take me to Manhattan, I'll indulge myself. I even magnanimously asked, anyone go to Manhattan? You wanna ride with me? No one responded. Okay, fine. I don't care, I'll take my own taxi. 20 minutes. I was like, okay, screw that. So I'm like, okay. I walk to the bus. I'll take the bus down to Atlantic Avenue. It'll be fine. I can catch a number of trains. I happen to live in the second most populous neighborhood in New York. So forget the bus or any of the buses. They were packed to the gills. Now I'm starting to change. And I'm literally pacing back and forth, looking for the bus, checking all the different apps, what's coming. Luckily, there are lots of what we call dollar vans that are now $2, but going up and down Flatbush Avenue, you know, I'm able to catch the fifth one. Standing room only, no problem. Okay, and it just goes down from there, right? It's like, he takes a detour, the detour is like closed off. I mean, it was just like, nothing went right. And as this was happening, I was recognizing two things. Of course, I was recognizing that the public transportation system wasn't going my way. But I also began to have this recognition that when things didn't go my way, or when this set of circumstances wasn't going my way, something was happening inside of me. My attitude was changing. I was not happy. And so I felt myself kind of going off the rails, giving myself a little bit of permission to act a little naughty when there was really no need, except for I wanted to kind of pitch a fit. And I didn't. And what was kind of in the back of my mind was I had the keys to the building. And the staff wasn't in as early as we were coming to practice, and I didn't want the other people waiting. So we texted. There's Wi-Fi now in the public transportation. We texted and emailed, and they also were in their train debacle, and it was fine. But I recognized that when I'm not in sync with my environment, something happens and it doesn't feel good. Now, I may have a habit where I act a certain way. Maybe I act out, maybe I stomp around and demand that things happen. You know, some people were forcefully telling the driver they weren't gonna pay him. Other people were saying, you know, don't be rude. Some of us just started laughing at the absurdity of, you know, trying to go like a mile, you know, and it taking 45 minutes. And when I realized there was nothing to do but relax with the situation, it actually gave me a tremendous amount of relief. So there's some innate intelligence we have when we can recognize when we're trying to force our idea of an experience on the actual experience we're having. Do you know what I mean when I say that? There's like the experience we're having, and then there's like the experience we want to be having. Sometimes that gap isn't so bad, right? It's like, oh, okay, this is like an A minus, I wanted an A plus, but that's like, but then sometimes it's like a D minus situation, or we feel that way, and the gap feels so insurmountable. But there's a part of us that has our basic intelligence or our basic intrinsic wisdom that knows, like, we can't force the MTA to our will. And so sometimes I just ask myself, is the thing that I'm doing, is that helping me? Is that going to help me get what I want? It's usually no. Right. And there's another aspect to recognition too, which is that I, and a lot of people, we wanted our suffering or our inconvenience or our fear of being late. People were talking about if they don't get to work, they don't get paid. You know, real material concerns. We want our situation, our particular situation, to be recognized by other people. We want someone to say, I understand, I get it. It's not your fault. No problem. So we, on the cushion, kind of exploit or explore this tool of recognition. We recognize some, we want some help. We want some workability, some more tools working with our minds, with our attitudes, with our emotions, right? And we may be getting help in other places, or we may have a lot of skills, but we recognize that, hey, maybe it's okay being a human being and living with 8.5 million other human beings and countless other non-human beings, some of them who invade our homes. Thinking of, you know, mice and such. But we have this intelligence. We don't have a deficit. So the second aspect is aspiration. And this is a quote from this gentleman, Sakyong Mipam Rinpoche, who's Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche's son. He says, at this time, great confusion and suffering exist because humanity cannot simply be. We are tormented by lack of harmony. As warriors of Shambhala, it is up to us to gently blow on the ember of goodness with courageous windhorse, aspiring that we may personally take responsibility for uplifting ourselves and society. We do not do so by castigating ourselves, but by appreciating who we are as human beings. So this sense of aspiration has to do with building on recognition, has to do with, I want to do something in the world for good, let's say, I assume. And from a meditation or Dharma point of view, one of, though not the only thing, one of the best things that we can do is get to know ourselves in this fundamental way. What happens when we get to know the quality of our mind? Why is that important? Because thoughts are building blocks of actions. Our thoughts tell us a lot about ourselves. What's going on in here? So one analogy I like to use is that it's like you wake up one day and you realize your home, there's a hole in your floor, your windows are broken, there's no electricity, there's no heat or AC. You don't know where, you know, the furniture's broken, there's dirt everywhere. But the good news is that this is the first time you've ever noticed. You've been perhaps living this way for a while. Now you could regard this as a bad situation. Ugh, I gotta get a new home. This is horrible. Or you can say, oh wow, I think this is workable. I have some boards I can, you know, put over the windows or put over the hole in the floor. Or I have some friends who know how to do that. Ah, there's a vacuum. Oh, I can check the fuse box for the electricity, right? So that there's a quality of, I want to have a livable space. How do I do that? Right? We regard it first as workable, possible. The structure is already there. And there's something in us that says, I want to do this. I mean, if we don't want to, then that's a whole other story. But there's something in us that says, I have the desire to do this, to sit, to work with my mind and my body. Not to be a goody-goody or to, you know, even be a better person, but to see what's there. What am I actually working with here? Who am I? What is the quality of my mind? When I first started meditating, I had a lot of ideas about what a meditator was and what meditation was. So that made it very challenging for me on the cushion. Well, first of all, it made it very hard to even get to the cushion because I thought, because I read a lot about meditation, I was meditating, right? It's like, I read about fighting fires, so obviously I am fighting fires, right? So I, you know, was very comfortable with the intellectual part of meditation, which there is, you know, contemplation and study is a part of it. But I had so many preconceived ideas because there was some fear. And when I finally started really trying to sit, I found that kind of my worst fears were true, that I was so uncomfortable. It was so uncomfortable. But it wasn't that I was finding something, some deep, dark secret about myself that was scary. In fact, what I found out was that I just had a lot of really repetitive thoughts. I was a lot less interesting than I thought. I thought I was gonna have so many, you know, like, whoa, wowsy, wowsy, you know? It was like a lot of stuff about, I mean, just, you know, quotidian everyday stuff, food, sex, sleep. Like, I don't know, thoughts about sleep, but I had them. Conversations with people that I was going to have, you know, or that things I should have said, really witty things. I was trying to come up with witty things and store them, you know. And I would always forget when I got off the cushion. And then, the same thoughts. I came to this meditation center in a tremendous amount of psychic pain, like an emotional pain. And I wanted meditation to fix me. I thought I was broken. I thought there was something wrong with me. And I had a bit of a demand on myself in relationship to sitting that I would be fixed, which in my case meant I wouldn't have any emotions anymore or the emotional experience I was having at the time. So that didn't happen. But what did happen was I had a recognition that I wanted some help. And I started meditating on my own and then listening to, podcasts or whatever they were called in 2006. MP3s, I guess, is just what we called them. And then I Googled and figured out there was a place that was the person who I was listening to, Pema Chodron, was her lineage. And I came here. And what happened for me was that there was some, the aspiration and the desire to meditate was buoyed, energized by coming and sitting with all you people. That carried me. I would come here on Tuesday nights and I would, sit, and it took me a while to stay and for the cheese and stuff. I was so nervous. But I would sit and listen to these different people, Joe Maurizio, who's giving a talk, he's doing a talk tomorrow, and different teachers, some are still here, some who are not. But and it gave me, it kind of emboldened or buoyed, strengthened my aspiration to meditate, because I experienced some, I don't even know if relief is the word, but I experienced some relief maybe. Okay, so the third part, commitment and practice. So I had all this whole different definitions of practice and whatever, I don't know if I'm gonna get into that. But so does someone have what does it mean to be committed to something? Obligated to it, okay. Stick with it.
That even if a larger part of you is not wanting to do something, if you've made a commitment, you somehow find a way to empower the perhaps smaller part of you that does want to do it, and or at least try.
At least try, yeah, okay. So we've got this obligation, stick-to-itiveness, and just try. Yeah. So we might think of it as applying oneself, or even says in the OED, the Oxford English Dictionary, binding, that sounds so scary, binding oneself to a particular course of action. Softer way of saying that is maybe aligning or oneself with a particular course of action, or placing oneself on a path or a course of action. And I think commitment has a relationship to another word that's maybe challenging, discipline, right? And sometimes when we hear the word discipline, we immediately think punishment. But discipline in this sense has to do with gentle repetition, or gentle consistency, gentle application, frequently. So it's not about a rigid attitude or an attitude of you're going to get in trouble or punishment or anything like that. It has to do with, it's like I just brush my teeth every day. I floss too. But it took me like 20 years to floss consistently. Like that was not easy. After a few unfortunate dentist trips, and I hate the dentist, so that's like, or I have an aversion to the experience of being at the dentist, right? I really do. It scares me, but I have a really great dentist now, so I'm okay. But it took a long time to, I was very not committed to flossing. And suddenly, I had kind of some inspiration, and now I floss all the time. And it's unremarkable. And that sort of goes with the idea of practice, right? Where I just keep trying to apply. And there's kind of wisdom in quote-unquote failure. Right? It's a lot of wisdom to be gained in starting and stopping and, you know, trying something. And particularly with meditation, it is something that we practice. We call it a practice. How do we learn how to practice? Well, you come here, some of you do, every week, or every other week, or once a month, or whatever. And there's a sense that we try to regard it as pretty ordinary. And not that we're going to necessarily be transformed or become, you know, float or anything like that, but that we're going to get to know ourselves a little bit better, our thought patterns, right, our habitual patterns. You can learn a lot about yourself on the cushion. It's very, very fascinating. But again, there's a sense of gentleness with the whole thing. And by gentleness, I mean relaxation. You know, we live in this city that is so incredible. It's so vibrant. It's so active and activating. And we probably all have our, you know, safe spaces we go to for quiet or solitude, whether it's we can, you know, leave the city and go to the island or upstate or something, New Jersey. For me, I live across the street from Prospect Park, so I just love that park. But I always have to leave that park and go back, you know, cross the street and go into my apartment and deal with life things. And so this relationship I develop to meditation is similar to this relationship I have with the park. It's, I don't go there to hide, but I go there to kind of strengthen myself, to touch into something, some basic kind of sanity. I think that's all I want to say. I want to hear your questions, and I want to hear your questions.
So you can learn a lot about yourself when you meditate. So there are so many times when I'm doing exactly what you were talking about, the laundry, you know, all of these truly mundane things. So does that mean that I'm mundane? This is what I'm discovering.
What do you think?
I'm scared. That's why I asked you.
You're scared of the mundane, or you're scared of being mundane? Why?
I guess because I would like to think that there's something more to me at the deepest level, that there's something more than just being superficially invested in my life.
Yes. Well, that very statement is your answer. I mean, of course you're not your laundry, right? Or your thoughts about your laundry. When I say you can learn a lot about yourself by your thoughts, it's not that you are your thoughts. It's the pattern, right? It's the, all of us have it, the desire to move away from just resting with whatever is going on, right? The gap between what's happening and what we want to be happening, which is something else. So it's not that like you like want to run a laundromat or something, right? You know this. We wear ourselves out a little bit too, right? And there's a, I think, comes a point, or at least came for me, where it was like I used to pass the time in meditation by thinking. I was like, oh, wow, that's really interesting. And then something switched where it got much harder. It was much easier to stay present than to think. I mean, that's counterintuitive to me, right? But that's how it is now. It is much more, I use up much more energy. I always did, but it takes much more energy for me to actually think. Not to have thoughts, but to like escape through thinking than it does to just keep returning to the technique. And thoughts are always happening, right? It's a mechanism of the brain, but also the mind, which is not exactly the same thing as the brain. The thoughts are the signs of our intelligence, of our awakeness, literally, but also figuratively. So your mind is the sky, and thoughts are the clouds, right? They're just passing through. Sometimes it's an awesome cloud shape. You know, you're like, wow, that's... And sometimes it's just like, bloop, bloop, you know. That's not a technical term for a cloud, but you know. Right? So there's no problem with your thoughts. They're happening.
How do you fit feelings in there? And how do you keep the feelings from overwhelming the... I mean... I only wish that I were thinking about my laundry.
Sure.
Instead of thinking about killing myself or something, or just raging against something.
Yes.
How do you deal with that?
How do you deal with that in the meditation situation?
Not well.
Not well. Do you think, or do you... think about something else.
Well, I try and look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And
examine the thought.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or the feeling.
Or feeling. Mm-hmm.
And have some compassion for it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I've been taught to do.
Sure.
And that's about as far as I've been taught, and mm-hmm. I'm not very good at it.
Okay. That's a very traditional technique, which is very good, and it works, which is that I believe there probably is a workshop called Working with Strong Emotions. I learned to live mindfully. 24, thank you. So we can think of emotions and feelings, and they're strong thoughts, right? We have strong thoughts, we have strong emotions, we have strong feelings. These things all come up on the cushion. So the first thing to apply is gentleness. If it's really something triggering, you might not be able to do sitting meditation for a while. One might not be able to do sitting meditation for a while. You might try walking meditation, where your mindfulness is on both your feet and legs and the environment, right? So that's one option. The other thing is to do as you said, which is sort of like this contemplation. Who's having this feeling? Where is this feeling in my body? Where does it come from? What are its components? And what begins to happen sometimes when we practice that, it's not a one-shot deal, is that we begin to see that it's like a tendril or a ball, or it's, and we can see some of it's not as fixed and solid as we think it is, right? So there's a feeling, right? Feeling has a quality, I think, of like experience, right? Direct experience. And even emotion has a little bit more relationship to a storyline, right? So there's a feeling, right? Whatever it is, a flash of fear or a flash of sad or a flash of joy. It's just it's an experience, right? And then maybe even emotion is a little bit of, that's, right? We begin to contextualize it or shape it. And then if we have a memory or a set of thoughts attached to that, the experience of that feeling, it can be really big or really strong and much more difficult to work with on the cushion. So it's always about applying gentleness with ourselves, right? You can just be like, okay, I need to just like come out of this. Maybe if you have a meditation instructor or someone you are talking to about meditation, you might want to have a more intimate conversation with that person, and maybe you can get some tools to work with that. But always take care of yourself first. You know, none of this is about forcing yourself to do something. You know, we're the product of habits of thought and experience. So sometimes when we encounter that on the cushion, it's very overwhelming.
When you in your story, when you first came here and you got into it,
yes.
What was your daily practice like outside of here?
Great question. So it definitely wasn't daily at first, that's for sure. I'm trying to remember so I can accurately represent. So at first it was, I was very ambitious. And so there's a lot of self-aggression. So I had to sit for a particular amount of time that meant something. I don't know who, because I was the only one, but whatever. There was somebody, right? Meditation scorekeeper. So I was very ambitious. I was, you know, had to sit for a particular amount of time and in a particular way. And then I began to relax a little bit. I just made some time for me, mostly the morning's work. But each person has to find out some people are better at night, some people are better in the middle of the day, some people are better in the morning, some people are good all day. But I found that mornings were a good time for me, and I had been in a habit of having a morning ritual for a long, long time. Since when I was a kid, my mom used to wake us up and we'd have devotions at like 5:45 in the morning. So I was like used to like morning, you know, like, so not that I practice at 5:45 in the morning, but so there was a sense of, I tried to practice most days, but 3 times a week is great. Every other day, if you can. 5 or 10 minutes. That was a real struggle for me sometimes. And so I had a whole very complicated system where I would add a minute per week. It was super gentle though, right? I was like, I can sit for 4 minutes. Okay, next week, 5. And I like tabulate. It was like a little much, but and then I would just, you know, sit for, let's say, 10 minutes and until that felt like I could do more. Just naturally, until like the time kind of flew by most times. And I was like, okay, maybe we can do 12 minutes now. Not like 30 minutes or whatever. So it was very, for me, it was very gradual. Some people, I have some meditation students who they're like, they sit 20, 30 minutes every day. I'm like, well, you know, it took me a long time to build up to that, maybe, you know, 3 years. You know, you'll figure out your own pace, but you'll usually hear people say 10 minutes. And if you can do that 3 times a week on your own, that's great. I still to this day, a lot of times, I mean, my practice is a little bit longer, so I do have to do this. I put it in my calendar and set an alarm so that I'm reminded to sit. So I had to do that at first to kind of get in my routine. It's like, you know, gym, work, you know, meet, you know, whatever the, you know, appointments, meditation. So, and then when I would come here on Tuesdays or later for classes, it helped me. It actually gave me energy to do it. What's your experience with meditation?
I've been doing it for a year, okay. Off and on.
Great.
I have done the kind of gradual thing as you described.
Yeah.
Like I'll do 5 minutes, and then if that goes well for a few days, then
yeah,
I'll do 8 minutes.
Great.
But then I've been trying to do too much, and then
yes,
it's not working. And
yes.
Then, yeah. So
yes,
I think the gentle thing works better for me.
You know, it's interesting you say this because I've been realizing how easily the word gentleness comes out of my mouth and out of the mouths of many Shambhala people. And I think people hear that word, they're like, gentle. Because it's really, it's like gentleness is like a prophylactic, right? Because basically, if we don't apply gentleness, we get into this really aggressive thing with ourselves. We somehow like fail at meditation. It's a weird, and then we don't want to do it. So it's like a preventative, you know? It's like the gentleness, a gentle attitude is, because eventually it's going to come easily. That's how it happens. If you just, you know, try to do it regularly. For some people that means daily. For some people that means a few times a week. Not too tight, not too loose, you know what I mean? And then one might go through times where you just don't want to meditate. You just can't meditate, you know? And that's, you just regard that as part of the experience of trying to meditate, you know? It's like with anything else that you practice.
Her worries about laundry, thinking just about laundry. And then you were scared, and I thought, oh, I'll come up to her afterwards, and I have this suggestion, but I thought, let me put it out, and because
okay,
I don't, who am I to make it?
Who am I?
What about that fear being a place to go to lean into, because that right away, that's not a laundry list. What's that fear about? That's maybe a very deep opening that you're kind of yearning for, maybe? I don't know.
Let me see if I understand that question. So kind of the fear of being mundane?
Whatever that fear is, that's maybe a really...
Yeah.
Non-laundry.
Sure.
Okay. Well.
Yeah.
<there's what's... laughs>
Yeah. Cool. I think, you know, untraining ourselves out of regarding ourselves, including our thoughts, as problems is a long journey. Because, you know, including myself, I've talked to a lot of people, I've had this experience, less so now, where how you get things done is kind of like through a little bit of a battering ram sometimes. You know, we all have the judge, right? And it's like, a lot of people have that, right? Where it's like you wrench yourself, right? And that feels like productive. When you say like, relax and be gentle, it's like, what is that? How's that going to get me what I want? Relax, be gentle, you know? I want to do this. I want this to work. It needs to happen. But it's like 20 miles in the forest, 20 miles out. So we've got, it took us some time to develop these habits of thought, right? And it takes some time to, first of all, notice them, right? You have to wake up first in the bedroom before you notice that you don't have a door, right? It's like the Matrix, you know what I'm saying? I use this example all the time. It's like a great Buddhist movie, right? It's like, oh, well.
Go on.
So it's just basically about waking up to the reality underneath the reality. And understanding that there's a perception and then there's ultimate reality. And kind of touching into that instead of just saying, well, this is how I want things to be, so this is how they're going to be. And we run into a lot of conflict that way, right? My habits of thinking can put me into conflict with people if they don't, you know, if I don't work with them. Or I'm confused about why I'm having messages from the world that seem to be saying, you're a jerk. And it's not that I'm a jerk, but maybe I'm a little bit out of sync with my environment. And that's causing me to cause others harm, right? With, you know, body, speech, and mind. So, you know, sitting on the cushion is not about becoming a good person. It's not even about becoming a good meditator. And it's certainly not about not having thoughts, but it's about working with the raw material we have, which is all we need. What we have in our person right now is fundamentally all we need to wake up. There's nothing to import. There's nothing to, you don't swap out this brain for another brain, right? I mean, maybe one day I'm sure they'll be able to download some other experience, but right now, this is what we've got, you know what I mean? And it's good. What we've got is good, actually. It's really good. It's good stuff. Doesn't mean that everything has been good, right? Doesn't mean that everything is great. It means that it's workable. That's it. You know, people mention the Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha, right? This dude, well, depending on what story you believe, he was either a prince or he was like a chieftain's son, right? But he had a life of leisure in the ancient times, as leisurely as it could be, right? And he was dissatisfied. He had some recognition, right? Something's off. And he, you know, went out to the world to experience the world and learn from other people. Like we all do, right? I read something about Pilates. I think I'm gonna, you know, you should drink this amount of water. Now I'm like, this app and it tracks your water. I'm like, why do I do these things to myself? You know, I'm like, 9 glasses of water. A day, you know. So he experienced the world and various practices, and one day he sat down and experienced his mind in relationship to his body. And he did not get up, apparently, until he woke up. Okay, I'm not that committed, so I need increments to come back and forth. But that same exact quality that this guy had, you have, and you have, and you have, and I have. Essentially because we're a human being. That's the view. That's all you need.
Can you address, we're talking about mundane,
yeah,
the issue of boredom and the fear of boredom, and the fear of being alone with your own mind, and how that might characterize your meditation?
So what's your experience with boredom?
I'm afraid of it.
You're afraid of boredom on the cushion. And in life?
In life. It's a driving force.
Mm-hmm. Do you experience boredom on the cushion?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, that's one of the reasons I don't meditate as much as I would like to.
Yes.
because I think I would like to.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's actually a good thing to experience boredom on the cushion.
I think it's the door to understanding.
Whatever we're experiencing, whether it's fear or boredom or a fear of boredom, it's actually the thing we want to just work with. And how we work with it is we just feel it. I'm sitting on the cushion, and I don't know, sometimes I'm more aware and sometimes I'm not. And all of a sudden, particularly in this setting, right, all of a sudden I'm sitting there and I think, what? Does my talk make any sense? And then I'm like, and then all of a sudden I just, something, awareness, just notices that and just says, come back. It's not the time to fix it. Too late. Sorry. You're meditating. You're teaching meditation, in fact. You're instructing people on how to meditate. Come back to the experience of your breath. Fear is an emotion that we experience. So boredom is actually related to the fear of death, right? And so when we experience boredom, is it boredom? Or is it just we're experiencing what it to have a little bit more stillness than we usually have? But there's all kinds of boredom. There's cool boredom, which is actually where you want to get to, where it's really about relaxation. You're just relaxed. So whatever happens in your mind, you're with it. And the great thing about the mind is it shifts. So you may be bored, and then if you relax that boredom, you're going to have like an amazing, elaborate fantasy eventually, right? I've cooked all kinds of meals, you know, 5-course meals. I've gone on amazing vacations. Seriously. Time travel. And then the mind comes back, right? So, but I think working with that sensation of the thing we want to avoid, whatever it is really juicy. So much there. So thank you for your question.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for being here.
Thank you, Dr. Smalls, for a great talk. That was great. I really personally needed to hear that right now. Visit us at nyachinbala.org for all of our upcoming classes and weekend retreats. Meditation in Everyday Life beginning in next month in June. Also, we've got our 7-day, week-long meditation retreat happening in August. Lots of other great stuff in between. Email us at podcast@shambhalanyc.org. Your questions, comments, suggestions. If you happen to live in a different city, there's probably a Shambhala Meditation Center near you. But if you are in the New York City area, come say hi. Our weekly Dharma gathering is every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. You will hear these talks live and in person. Meet the teachers, the other people. You can do it. You can do it. Later.